Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 224. And this week, we have Randy Brown from the Iowa Basketball Coaches Association, former college assistant and head coach, high school coach from Iowa. You name it, Randy's done it. And really, really excited to have Randy on the podcast here this week. Before we get to Coach Brown, we, of course, want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 14450 Eagle Run Drive here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, give them a call at Dr. Kevin and Dr. Heidi's office, 402-964-0300. Check out their practice at CosacChiro.com. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, Spotify, iTunes, doesn't matter. Download, rate, review, give us 5 stars. Say nice things about us when people look up Coaching Basketball Podcast. Hopefully we jump up the standings a little bit more when you do that. So questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Go check out apenandanapkin.com. I really like it. I think it's a good website for basketball coaches. I'm a little biased because I'm the one that put it all together, but that's just me. So enough of that stuff. Randy Brown, coach, how are you doing this fine Sunday evening?
Outstanding. I'm really pleased to be with you, Marty. Your program comes with a really good reputation and really one of the great names of any of the programs out there. I love it. I always have.
Well, thank you. That was I've told this story before. It's probably been a while, so I'll refresh the listeners. My dad was a marketing instructor at Northwest Iowa Community College in Sheldon, Iowa for, I don't know, 25, 27 years. So a little bit of a marketing gene in me somewhere there, if you dig deep enough. And when I kind of came up with the idea, I mean, I'm not kidding you, Randy, I probably spent 2 weeks trying to figure out if I wanted to call it a napkin and a pen or a pen and a napkin. I mean, and a lot of times I just call it a pan, a pen and a napkin. But I've thought about it, you know, if I'd have said a napkin and a pen, it'd be a nap, and I don't want people to fall asleep. I don't want to put them to sleep here. So I didn't want to have them nap. So I think a pen and a napkin was kind of the destined name for it. But there was some consternation that went into it. So
interesting. That's good.
Yeah. So
that's good.
Well, Coach, excited to have you on here. Excited that you reached out to me. Let's just kind of get this started the way that we normally do for folks that don't know about your journey in the game and in life. Just tell us your journey.
Well, I grew up in Fort Dodge and currently live back here now too. And I was really blessed. My father was a sports writer at the Fort Dodge Messenger. And so if you're a little guy and your dad says, do you want to go to work with me? That means you're going to the ball game. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in the gym and I really got a taste for what athletics was all about. Got a really good look into what a coach is really all about. And my idol when I was a young guy was Dutch Huseman, and he was the head basketball coach here at Fort Dodge High School. And I learned so much from him, and we stayed in touch forever, ever and ever, through my career. And I learned a lot just from being in that environment and following my dad into the locker room and listening to the questions he would ask coaches and how they would respond. So I got a really good inside look at what this whole athletics thing and coaching thing was. And I've been so fortunate because really that's the one thing I wanted to do when I was a little guy. I decided I love basketball and it worked out for me, and thank goodness it did, because I just feel very blessed and fortunate that I got a chance to pursue my dream. And my dream was to be a coach, and then eventually it became to be a college coach, and those things happened. And tremendous tremendous memories, tremendous experiences, and met some of the greatest people on earth. Mm-hmm. And you can't beat that.
No, absolutely.
So that's how I started my run.
Uh-huh. You've been at a wide variety of places, Coach. You just kind of rattle them off there a little bit.
Well, yeah, and you know, my high school, I actually took my first coaching job as a junior at the University of Iowa. I was in the basketball theory class one day, and Jim Rosborough, one of Lute's assistants at Iowa, mentioned that Iowa City Regina had an opening for a JV coach, and I got a hold of the coach over there, Mike Rothmullen. And so as an undergrad at Iowa, I was also kind of a full-time coach at the high school level, and I just could not get enough of it. And I knew that I had to do it for sure. But I started there. I did my student teaching at West Branch, and then I took my first job out of college at Pleasant Valley High School out in the Quad Cities. Mm-hmm. I was a JV coach and varsity assistant there. And that's how I started. And then my college jumps went in this order. University of Arizona as a graduate assistant. I spent a year at Drake and 2 years at University of North Dakota. I then went from there to Marquette with Kevin O'Neill, who had been on our Arizona staff. Went to Miami of Ohio in the MAC, and then ended up in Florida at Stetson University in DeLand, Florida, where I was assistant coach for 3 years and then became the head coach at Stetson. And finished my run at Iowa State. When Coach Floyd left to go to the Bulls, they hired Larry Eustace, and I was able to go work for Larry, which is an unbelievable experience. The rest is kind of history with what happened with the program there and the teams we had, and that's how I finished up. It was. I learned quickly that you move a lot when you're in that profession, and especially if you have goals. And I set goals because I wanted to be a head Division I coach, even though I didn't really know what that was all about when I was 20. When I set my goals, it's where I wanted to go. And sometimes that just part of the formula is that you got to jump a little bit more than you normally would, but. Mm-hmm. Every person at every stop, from the head coach on down, man, I was so blessed, and I'll always say it, because top-notch Hall of Fame people at every stop, and tremendous. I just got really, really lucky.
Mm-hmm. So let's do a little rapid fire exercise here, Coach. I've got about 8 or 9 names here. And so we're going to go about 60 seconds ish a piece, and just, in 60 seconds or so, tell us why or how this particular coach influenced you, what you learned, what were the top one or two things that you learned from them, just wherever you'd like to go with it. How's that sound?
Yeah, and I'll start. That's great. I'll start with Mr. Iba. Mm-hmm. Mr. Iba at Oklahoma A&I is somebody that I knew about and I followed. I remember buying his book. And, of course, then we had the skinny lanes, and basketball was different at that time. But I learned a lot from that book and about Coach Iba, and have learned a ton about him since. But he was kind of one of the first ones, he and John Wooden, I would say, that probably really jumped out to me. Gary Garner is one of basketball's great coaches that not a lot of people probably have a lot of name recognition with. He did a great job at Drake. He mm-hmm. won a national Division II title at Fort Hays State, mm-hmm. and just retired last year after coaching a long, long time. Coach Garner taught me something that nobody else taught me, and that's that the game is made up of multiple parts. And as coaches, we want our players to be good at all those parts. Well, you can't do it. It just isn't possible. Coach Garner came up with what I call the top three. And he said, first of all, you're either a defensive coach or an offensive coach. And number two, you better get really, really good at three parts of the game that you think lead in concert, the three of them together with being able to win as many games as possible. And I'd never heard that. And I there's not a coach, I don't run into a coach without talking and asking about what their top three is. So that's one really phenomenal part of the game. I think I learned from Coach Garner, and he's back in Des Moines. He's a wonderful person, a great guy. He's been very good to me. Mm-hmm. Tim Floyd has been very important in my I guess my time, first of all, because he's got great taste. He's a bass fisherman. And we spent a lot of time fishing together, he and I. And I actually the year before he went to the Bulls, I was taking a year off from Stetson and coming back to Iowa. And Tim was really, really good for me. Very supportive, very, very someone that really got me involved in a lot of things at Iowa State before I even went to work there, just because that's the kind of guy that he was. And then he took off, went to the Bulls, and things mm-hmm. changed for me too. So,
sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Lute Olson, you know, Coach Olson was he held sort of three distinct things with me. Number one, he was my idol. He was also, when I went to work for him, my mentor. And then thirdly, he was my boss. You would think he's my boss, but he's not. I was a little in awe going to work for Lute Olson. Sure. I've been a student at Iowa, obviously, and I dragged myself over there at 3 o'clock in the old field house, getting close enough to be able to hear what was said on the floor. And I spent as much time in the old field house watching practices than I did anything in Iowa. And that's where my my bedrock foundation and philosophy came from Coach Olson and those practices at Iowa. I'm just so happy to be able to go work for him and his assistant coaches at Arizona.
Do you think that Lute has kind of unfairly been forgotten with his influence and just how good of a coach he was? I mean, he was terrific at Iowa, and then, you know, I mean, that Arizona program was awful when he took over and built it into a national contender. I mean, people considered a blue blood, but before he came along, it was nothing, you know.
It was awful. Yeah. In fact, they won two games. They were 1-17 in the Pac-10 the year before he got there. And in his first year, they were very competitive. In his second year, they went to the NCAA tournament, and mm-hmm. I joined in 85, 86, and 87. And by 88, he goes to the Final Four with Kerr and Elliott and those guys.
Yep.
Unbelievable. I just recently, during the Final Four, by the way, I drove down to Tucson. I hadn't really taken a great look at the city since I had left, and got a chance to see Coach's statue and the Hall of Fame and all the different things they've done in and around McHale Center, and it's a great tribute to him. I think we do sort of lose, that really powerful influence that they had at one time. But I think time does that, because time moves on, and different coaches move in and out. But he will be remembered forever at the University of Iowa. And I know there's still people that are mad at him for leaving in 1983 and going to Arizona. I was one of them, and I couldn't figure it out. But he's a smart man, and he knew exactly what he was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Let's keep going here. Don Logan.
Yeah. So I have three Dons that were really instrumental for me, and they were my mentors. Mm-hmm. I was just a young guy that was enthralled with the game and couldn't get enough of it. But Don Logan, bless his heart, man, that guy, we've become such good friends, and he has been in charge as director of the IBCA since the late 60s, early 70s. I mean, a long time. And he has put his heart and soul into the association to help out our high school coaches. And he was very gracious to me when I was a young coach, and helped me along. The other one was Don Showalter, who was at Mid Prairie, who now courses with USA Basketball. And one of the first camps I ever worked was with Show over there at Mid Prairie. And we've maintained a great friendship. And then Don Grunewald was one of my favorite guys of all time. in or out of coaching. Grunies was just one in a million, and he helped me a ton, too. He was the head coach over at Clinton High School. And I have to add Jerry Slykus, and we lost Jerry a few years ago to a very difficult accident. And he was everybody's best friend, man. He was a wonderful guy, and he was really good to me when I came back to Iowa, and we had some family. We really had some family adversity we had to go through, and he was there every step of the way. And then the last one is Dutch Huseman, who I mentioned, who I remember when I was 8 years old coaching that team down the street at the high school. Mm-hmm. And so this is how blessed I was. I mean, all those guys, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Just really unbelievable. Yeah. They're all Hall of Famers in my book.
You were relatively young. You weren't in high school for terribly long before you made the leap from the high school level to the collegiate level. What did you see? What were obviously a big difference, but what were two or three of the biggest differences, and what did you see pretty early on that you needed to add to your skill set if you were going to achieve the goals that you wanted to achieve?
Well, Marty, the first thing was the level of detail and preparation that went into everything. And I mean, Coach Olson, we had like our boosters in Arizona were called the rebounders. And if we were organizing a rebounders function, you would have thought that we were going to battle with UCLA. I mean, Coach wanted everything a certain way. He was very organized, tons of detail in everything. And you can imagine going to the floor and taking over that program, the shape it was in, and having to recruit the way they recruited and then get his team ready to compete nationally. Just phenomenal. I was blown away by the amount of detail in every single day, and I loved it. I loved that. I really took to it. That would probably be one of the top things. And I guess the other thing to me that was a surprise was I had in my mind, I think, when I entered the college game, that the players were going to be just totally, totally different than what a high school player might be. Mm-hmm. And you know what? In so many cases, they're not. They're the same. They're a little bigger. They're a little better. They have better skills. They're maybe more athletic, but they're just big high school guys is all they are. And when they get to the pros, they're just big college guys. Yeah. And they have the same struggles that my JV guys did at Pleasant Valley, West Branch, and Iowa City, Regina. And that kind of blew me away because I was expecting everybody just be almost flawless. And yeah, it was anything but flawless. So that was kind of an eye-opener. But those are two that come to mind probably.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, it is official. October 12th and 13th, Saturday and Sunday, October 12th and 13th, 2024, will be our first annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Retreat. It is going to be over 24 hours of just basketball coaching and getting yourself primed and ready for the upcoming season. We're going to do a lot of different things. Coach Flannery and the staff at Creighton University have been gracious enough to allow us to come in and watch them practice that day. We're going to have roundtable sessions with coaches that you're attending the clinic with, which is one of the best aspects of any A Pen and a Napkin event. We're going to have a full timeout situation score group discussion with the coaches that are attending, as well as coaches social, and then, of course, guest speakers. We got some great coaches lined up right now. We're probably going to be adding a couple of more here. It is going to be a great, great weekend here in Omaha. We'll be staying at the Holiday Inn Express at 87th and West Dodge Road here in Omaha, and it is really, really affordable. $200 for the weekend, and that includes food, that includes your lodging at the hotel, drinks, everything that goes into it. It is going to be included in that $200 for well over 24 hours worth of activities. If you're a commuter, if you're living in the Omaha area and you want to join in, but you don't want to stay at the hotel, it's $125. Think of that. That's literally $5-6 bucks an hour for an entire weekend of becoming a better coach. So coaches, I encourage you to sign up as soon as you can for the first annual A Pen and a Napkin Fall Coaches Retreat.
What are the things that you miss the most on a day-to-day basis? I mean, you know, you can keep yourself occupied, and right now, I mean, I'm a couple of months-ish removed from resigning from my position. And, you know, I know at a certain point I'm going to miss X, Y, and Z. I've got an idea of what those things might be, but,
sure.
but you've been out for a while now, Randy, and like you said, it was something that you were passionate about. What are some of the things that you miss the most about being in the day-to-day coaching lifestyle?
I love the planning that went into practice, the staff meetings, the amount of planning and detail that we did in game prep. Those things I loved. I call it the thrill of the hunt. I used to talk about that all the time because there's always that next game. And, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs to life. There's a lot of ups and downs to being a coach and having a team. But the thrill of being prepared and getting ready to go to battle with that next opponent was just intoxicating to me. I just loved it. And so the thrill of the hunt was huge. And, I would say that without a doubt, though, the number one thing is just being around the guys, being part of their life, mm-hmm. and understanding that they're, like I said, they're just big kids. Mm-hmm. You know, they have fears, they have insecurities that they try to mask it because they're supposed to be kind of, you know, bigger than life, you know, on the big stage in college basketball. But to be part of their lives was really special. And you do miss that after a while because, yeah, the game is one thing, but going day to day with them through ups and downs and different things, seeing players when their careers are over and I've moved on from that school, let's say with my coaching or left coaching, mm-hmm. like I have, and you hear from one of your players, it is one of the fantastic gifts of my life is to be able to hear from those guys and to maybe hear a thank you, or I've heard many of them say, I'm glad you pushed me. I wasn't glad at the time, but I know what you were doing now. And you were getting this tough for life. You were getting this ready. And boy, those things mean the world when they compliment you like that. I think that's the greatest compliment a player can give their coach. And so, those are some of the things you miss. But for me, fortunately, Marty, the thing that I don't get too far from is being able to see my guys. I can turn on the TV any given night during college basketball and see either guys I have known for my whole life or guys that I have mentored that are now out there coaching, and I can spot them. They're out there all over the country, and that's really a really neat personal thing for me to know that I had a little bit to do with mentoring these young guys that got a chance to get into college basketball. And it makes me feel closer to the profession. You do miss a lot. Yeah. There's no question about it.
Yeah. You do a lot of stuff with the IBCA, the Iowa Basketball Coaches Association. What kind of role do you have with that? I've talked with, you know, a few guys from my homeland, if you will, Kylie Yates, Jeff Schertz, Nate Sanderson,
yes.
You know, and
yes.
just all quality coaches, quality people. And, you know, what can, you know, I really think the IBCA has some really, really good things when it comes to its Basketball Coaches Association, and, mm-hmm. and what's it trying to do to help coaches get better, you know?
Well, our mission going way back when I think when Raz Vanderloo's father was the president of the IBCA, and back when Don Logan, before Don even took it over, you know, they came up with a mission which basically said everything is put aside if it's not something that benefits our coaches. And there was I learned a lot from that because there is great respect for coaches, because coaches spend a lot of time and effort and energy and their heart into coaching players and teams. And the association wanted to make sure that our number one motivation was anything that was going to help our coaches do their craft better.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, every time I'm involved in a lot of different things, but every time I'm involved in an activity, I do keep that in the front of my mind, because it is difficult to be a teacher all day, to coach maybe two or three or four sports, possibly have a family,
yeah,
and then have outside activities. It is really difficult. So, there are tremendous people on our board. There are tremendous coaches, boys and girls coaches and assistant coaches in this state. We are very blessed. And the least we can do as an association is to make sure that we are doing everything we can for them. I work a lot with the communications area. So I deal with the website. I'm the go-between between the company that set it up for us, and then keeping that up to date. Really involved with our clinic, a little involved with our mentoring program, which is tremendous, and Jeff's one that that deals with that. Communication in terms of newsletters to coaches, answering any questions we might, and we've got a couple of new things coming that I won't get into right now, but we've got some big things coming. I think awesome. Our coaches are going to be absolutely thrilled, and they're in the works right now. So it's a labor of love, and if it can keep me close to the game, I mean, I can't get enough of it. I love the IBCA and what it stands for.
Yeah, it's all about the anticipation, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah.
We are, as we say on A Pen and a Napkin, seasoned and experienced. And, mm-hmm. you know, so often, especially with young coaches, and we were probably guilty of it when we were younger too, Randy, is you sure. want to microwave it. You want to be great right away. You're driven, you're absorbing stuff, but there's just a certain thing. And I love what you put there. I say it kiddingly, but coaches are really looking for information that leads to instant results, and we are not in an instant result occupation. It's just very rarely, you know, people will talk about such and such coach, like, you know, Ty Lue winning a championship with the Cavs after taking over in the middle of the year. You know, I mean, there's mm-hmm. those isolated stories of lightning in a bottle, but this is just like with any job, it takes time to get really, really good at it.
Yeah. Well, it sure does. And you know, our world has moved, it seems like, very quickly. Our world has moved. I say all the time, I blame McDonald's for a lot of stuff, because as soon as they put in that first drive-through, you know, that was the biggest thing since sliced bread. And, you know, now we don't have to get out of our car. Yeah. To get food that probably isn't very good for us.
Yeah.
Crazy, right? And that filters down. There's no question about it, you know. And kids grow up wanting things instantly. And as coaches, we work hard, and we want to win every game. We want to win instantly. But I'll tell you, I think coaching basketball is much like golf. Golf is the most humbling sport I've ever played.
Uh-huh.
It just tricks you so many ways. and coaching is a lot like that, because a lot of times when we feel good about what we've got going, we are going to run into something that we don't have an answer for, and we're going to have a difficult loss, and it's going to go back to the drawing board. And that is just what you get into when you get into coaching. We never figure it out for life, and we figure it out to a point, but there are so many factors that go into doing our job and having the results be the way that we want them to be, that it makes it very frustrating at times. But, you know, I really like to challenge coaches and get them to look at the best way to put this is because of the way that our world has access to so much information, the same goes for coaching. Sure. And I think that's really, really good. And I think that can be really, really detrimental. If all we do is go online and look for an offense that's going to help us score, you know, more points, or a defense that's going to do this, and spend all of our time with offense and defense. You know, somebody told me a long time ago, coaching is all about managing people. Yeah. The X's and O's are going to take care of themselves. And boy, is that so true. It's still about those young guys and those young gals who are trying their heart out. And to coach them is it's just a wonderful profession. But boy, it's difficult, and mm-hmm. Things don't happen easy. And boy, we just need to really remember that we need to remember the people in the equation. I think that's so important. And it wouldn't matter what profession we're talking about. I think life is about managing people. Life's about relationships. Mm-hmm. Really, is what it is. And so let's not forget that. I would love to see us spend more time on that than the X's and O's, but the X's and O's are pretty intriguing too. So it's a combination though. And, I love our coaches in this state, because you'll see guys do some real creative things, and it takes courage, and it takes being uncomfortable to step away from something you're really familiar with and do something different year after year after year. If you look at good coaches in any sport at any level, they are always looking for a better way, not a wholesale different better way to do it, but maybe it's footwork.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's talking about, we got to catch and pass it better. Here's what we're really going to work on this year. And I have so much respect for that, because it'd be so easy just to shake your head and say, my players can pass and catch it and they're fine.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, you look at the guys that you respect in this state, in all sports, at all levels, and they tinker with the game, and they're not afraid to be uncomfortable and go out there with a team that's not really used to doing, you know, X, Y, and Z, because they think it might be the best thing for them. So
yeah,
we're lucky here. Lucky here.
Well, you gotta be that. If you're going to be successful for the long term, you've got to be a lifelong learner. I mean, if you sit there at 28 and say, well, here's my system and here's what we're going to do, you're up a creek without a paddle. You know, I mean, you just have to continue to examine, poke, prod, and just, again, you're not going to necessarily reinvent everything. You're going to have your core beliefs, but you've got to keep your eyes open, because you don't want to potentially miss anything that might help you out. Now, like you were talking about earlier, you can't do everything well. You've got to pick your three or four things that you want this particular team to be good at, based on a lot on their skill set. And then I think it was Jim Calhoun that said, you know, there's like 11 big things. Pick three or four that you want to be really good at. Please pick three or four that you want to, you know, be solid at, and then just try to keep your head above water on the other three or four. And I think there's a lot of truth to that as you put together your teams from year to year.
There sure is. And, you know, there's a reverse effect that goes on for coaches. And I experienced it, because I was the guy as a young guy who wanted to learn about it all. I wanted to be good at everything, which is okay. That's fine. But if you think your players are going to get good at all those things too, and it doesn't work out, you know, there's a chance to learn. And you can't listen to Jay Wright or Calhoun or Boeheim or any of the coaches who have stepped away from the game, or any of the guys who are in the last few seasons of their career, to not say something similar to, you know, this is an easy game. As coaches, we've got to make it an easy game for our players.
Yeah.
We can't emphasize too many things. He said, And they'll all say it to a T. When I was a young coach, I tried to be great at everything. And now I just want to be great at a couple things.
Yeah.
And almost everybody will say that. And I mean, what do football coaches say after a tough loss? They say, we're going back to the drawing board. It's all about blocking and tackling. It always has been, and it always will be. So we got to really be careful that we don't lose track of those real fundamental baseline, you know, type of skills and type of philosophy, because that's what wins. Mm-hmm. No question.
You wrote a book, Randy, Rebound Forward. It's been kind of a mantra. I apologize for not having a chance to read it, but mm-hmm. I would assume it covers some of the things that you've dealt with in your personal and professional life.
Yeah.
Some of the tragedy that you have had to face. Some of the mistakes that you have made along the way that
yep.
you have completely owned and have not mm-hmm. ran away from, which is so admirable. Just tell us about your book and just kind of what the lessons that you hope it exudes for those that might read it.
Well, we had just unbelievably, we lost a 4-year-old daughter in 1992. And in the next 5 years after we lost our Meredith, we lost our third oldest daughter 5 years later, and then almost our second oldest daughter in the middle of those two. And it was a period of time that is really hard for me to even describe, because I think we were in such survival mode. But looking back at that now and having experienced that, and then having experienced everything that coaching brings, you know, I don't believe, this is a personal take of mine, I don't believe there's anything in this world that can happen to us that is enough for us to say, I quit, I can't do it. I just don't know. There are many thousands and hundreds of thousands of people that have experienced a lot more than I have in the tragedy part of world of our world. But I'm telling you, this whole thing about resilience, this whole thing about when you get knocked on your butt, and this is why athletics are so powerful, because, and young people don't get it when they're in the middle of being a high school athlete, but we're actually doing an unbelievable job as coaches of preparing them for things that are going to pop up in their own life, that are going to be life things to handle, not basketball things to handle as a junior or senior in high school. But we, there might be some young coaches out there listening to this saying, I never really thought about it that way. I just thought I was coaching basketball. Well, it's way more than that. And I think it's one of the really cool things that we get to do as teachers and coaches is to provide those lessons for our players. Because, hey, nobody said this thing was going to be easy, this thing called life. Nobody said that we were going to skate through it without any adversity and no tears. It just doesn't work that way for anybody. And so Rebound Forward is all about just a resolution I made for myself that no matter how difficult it got, and it got difficult, mm-hmm. That I was going to rebound, which means get up, and then move forward, which means I don't know where it's taken me, but I'm going to put my best face on. I'm going to throw my shoulders back, and I'm going to step into the rest of my life, regardless of what I've had to go through to get there to that point. So Rebound Forward is it's actually not a basketball title. I think people think that it is, but sure. It isn't. It's about getting up and moving forward. And boy, we can all pull from that. It was very cathartic for me to write that book. And it's not the last one I'm going to write. I was just thrilled that I had an opportunity to write something that people were going to read and hopefully can rub off on them a little bit too. And that's more about what I'm doing now for my work. But I would, and I'm going to get you a copy of the book too. I'll make sure I get you a copy of the book, because
thank you very much.
Yeah. And I tell people I have one ask, if you buy or get the book as a gift or get it for me or whatever, it's just that you read it. And before you hand it to the next person, just go through your notes one last time, pull from it what you can, and then pass it on. I'm a big believer in passing books on. They don't believe in, I don't think they belong in bookcases. I think they're lifesavers. They can be lifesavers. And I think we really need to be great at passing them on to others.
Absolutely. Coaches are absolutely loving our taking over a new program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Coach, let's move here to our John Wooden quote of the day. From Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. Coach Randy Brown, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day?
I am.
All right. So this is a little bit longer one here. Page 44 from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. Here is our John Wooden quote of the day for episode number 224. Youth is a time of impatience. Young people can't understand why the problems of society can't be solved now. On the other hand, older people often become set in their ways, fear change, and accept problems that should be addressed and resolved. The divide between the young and the old could be greatly lessened by more mutual trust and understanding of the other fellow.
The wise man there.
Yeah. He did all right.
Yes, he did.
What do you think of that?
I think it's just so true. And, you know, different seasons of life, because when we're young, we really only have so much to gauge our perspective on, right? Mm-hmm. We only have so many years. But all of a sudden, you get later in life, and the years accumulate, and you think of all the things that we've seen and done or had done to us, or all the different situations we've been in, and you just start thinking and looking at things a little bit different. And it just depends where we're at in our life. Mm-hmm. But I love the quote, because when you talk about young people, it reminded me of the young people really not understanding why coach is asking them to do it, but he's asking them to do it, so they're going to do it. But later they figure it out. Yeah. Later they realize why coach had them do all those things. Mm-hmm. And it comes full circle, and that's pretty cool.
Yep. Let's talk a little bit about your professional career here. Again, kind of just a little bit different pod here this week, because we're not really going to dive into a bunch of X's and O's or basketball philosophy, but at the same time, I think we're going to talk about some really, really important things here. Mm-hmm. in the second half. Let's talk about your program, Elite Coach Mentoring, and I'm going to leave it really open-ended, Randy. Just kind of go into it and talk about how you came up with it, what it is, what you do with it, what areas do you address, so forth and so on.
Well, when I started my mentoring program, I was pretty, I had a skill development component to it, which I loved. And we had that going for 4 or 5 years and really enjoyed that. But the thing that's been consistent with it is to be able to mentor young coaches around things I had learned, but I only learned them from the greatest in the game. Mm-hmm. And I had this thing that used to just bug me to death. And that was just, hey, I can't avoid this. I can't just leave these things in my past and say, yeah, I used to be a coach. I said, I can help these young coaches. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to me. It really is. And that's why I just cherish my work with IBCA. And so I created both an opportunity for young coaches to learn about the coaching craft, a little bit about X's and O's, sure, but more about a lot of the stuff we've talked about here together. The things about the kids come first. You know, these are people. We got to, you know, how do we manage people? And then it got really strong in a very specific direction that I guess I saw it going. And that was that, you know, I realized that in college basketball, it used to be, well, if you were a college player, you got a great chance to be a college assistant, uh-huh, or even like a high school head coach. And, you know, realize that it can be for everybody. You don't have to be a former player here or there, or you don't have to have pedigree in your family. You don't have to know a bunch of people. So I set out and created a career coach mentoring program for those that were aspiring college coaches. And there wasn't at the time anything in existence like it. And I think right now there might be a couple there might be a couple options for young coaches, but I've stayed pretty consistent with this, and I'm just really, really happy and fortunate that we've been able to move 130 coaches into the college game, from a lot of them with no experience even in coaching, let alone no experience in networking and knowing any other coaches. College students, you know, even younger than that. And it's just been an absolute ride for me. It's been great. 8 of those 130 have used their networking skills that they learned in the program to work their way up into the NBA. Mm-hmm. And to see those guys doing well at the NBA level and working their way up is really awesome. It's really been a tremendous thing for me. I get so much out of it because I see myself in these young coaches. I really do, because I was that guy at that age that didn't know anything. And all I knew is what I wanted to accomplish, but I didn't know how. Uh-huh. And, you know, what's really funny about it, there is no college major or minor for how you get into collegiate coaching in any sport. I know they kind of have philosophy of coaching and stuff, but it's really general stuff. And there's nothing really for it. And so I thought, well, I'll tell you what, I've learned a lot and I'm going to give it back. Uh-huh. And so that's really kind of how it started. And it's been very, very, just a neat thing for me, and we've been able to help a lot of coaches. And connecting with the right people is the number one thing that I teach. And it isn't what we know or who we know, it's who knows us. And that is a shift I make in my program. And when our young coaches start to learn how they can become known by the big name coaches in the country, everything changes for them, everything. And it might not take 6 months or a year or even 2 years, but it'll take as long as it needs to happen. And then they got a career in front of them. So it's been a blast. I've loved every second of it.
What without giving away the, you know, I don't want to give the cow away for free here, but, you know, maybe a glass of milk here. You know, what are some, what when you're talking about networking and the importance of networking, and I think that there's still, you know, networking is much different than when you and I started out with it. Like one of the key things that again, us seasoned experienced guys would do is, okay, I want to get to know the coach at Iowa State. I mean, this is how I got to know Bill Finley and Jody Steyer and those folks. You just, sure. Hey, I'm going to just go down and work the camp. And that's what we, you know, that's what I did, you know, but I would say there's many more avenues than just going and working camps today. Yes. And I think I think one thing that young coaches miss is not just to make networking connections, but genuine networking connections, true friendships, you know, in that regard. Is that some of the things that you emphasize there, Randy?
Yeah. In a real strong way. Listen, here's what I tell them, and this is I got this from I don't remember who way back when, but I remember a guy telling me at the Final Four. He said, "I don't care who you meet." He goes, "Whether they're at your level, whether they're above your level, whether they're below your level, or whether it's a high school coach, or whether it's a okay." He said, "Understand that 5 years from now, all of these people are going to be in different jobs." Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah,
I promise you, a guy you met yesterday could very well be the AD at a Division II school, and you end up interviewing with him for the job. I mean, conference commissioners, people who are were on the selection committee for the NCAA tournament, NBA, people that are in the NBA, assistant athletic directors, and then guys that you know. And if I'm going to be judgmental, I'm going to say, "Oh, that's just that guy." Mm-hmm. Well, he might be that guy in my eyes today, but he's not going to be that guy for long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you build a bridge in life, and you can take 101 great deeds and doing things the right way and totally trash them by building one bridge. And it really defines a lot of careers. And so, you know, that's just so important for them to have that perspective. And it's true. All those guys are going to become, you know, guys with really great jobs. And I guarantee you're going to end up wishing that you had treated that guy well, if indeed you didn't treat him well. I hope not. But that's one thing I get into their mind. And then IMA, because my parents were prolific handwriters. And Lute Olson was an unbelievable handwriter. He would go recruiting with a box full of mail. And he responded to almost every single piece of mail that came into that office, handwritten. And I try to impress on the young guys I work with that the greatest time in the history of our idea of civilization to be a handwriting a master is today, because we've gone electronic and we've gone digital. And if a handwritten note packs a punch like none other. It's magic. And now, since nobody's writing, I mean, when's the last time you got or wrote a handwritten note, right? Nobody writes even bills anymore. and so it's now becoming so unique that when you get one, it's like, "Oh man, I haven't got one of these in a long time." And I teach the power through 5 steps of how a handwritten note can literally be your entrance into the college basketball profession.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say of the 130 of those guys who have gone through the program and are doing really well, I would say easily well over 90% of them became masterful at becoming a handwriter. Mm-hmm. And it has worked. It does work, and it will always work. How else are you going to, you know, become somebody with a brand and be known by the Bill Selfs of the world, unless you can fly your private jet into practice every day and watch practice? I don't know many young coaches who have private jets.
Yeah.
I know a lot of coaches who can afford 55 cents for a stamp.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I could take my private jet down to Lawrence, but it's close enough for me in Omaha. I just drive down. So
there you go.
I'm just joking. Sorry, I interrupted you there, Randy. Keep going there.
Yeah. Well, that's the special sauce. Yeah. That's something that has worked for many, many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in it if I believe in anything.
Yep. Want to know more about A Pen and a Napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. APenAndANapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. Let's, you know, you kind of talked about that, and I think one of the key things that if you want to be really good, and for a long time, and I still do. I mean, I every day I'm still studying the game, even at my season experience, and I don't have a team to coach right now, and I mm-hmm. don't know if I'll ever have a team to coach again.
Right.
You know, I have to decide what I want to do, and I'm not ready to mm-hmm. do that. But anyway, you're still investing. You're still investing in yourself, and you have to invest in yourself in order to achieve anything that you want to do. You kind of have to, Rick Pitino very famously said, you have to deserve victory. And if you want mm-hmm. to climb, you have to deserve it. You have to put in that work to make it happen. It's just not going to poof and appear. And yeah, you can network, and that networking can open the door, but for you to stay in the room, you also have to have invested in yourself. So, you know, What are some keys that you've had in your career about just that very topic of investing in yourself?
It's really important because, listen, we live in a competitive world. You know, people just don't stand around and just let us have our way. I mean, it is really competitive. And especially in coaching, it's competitive. We must, I think one thing that always on this topic that I always think of is, you've seen polls of, okay, these are the top thought leaders, these are the top CEOs, business CEOs, these are the top people in any of the professions. Okay, what do they have in common? When you get down to it, being a reader of books is always one of the number one things that those people have in common. It doesn't matter who it is, you know. And so reading is, you know, you learn from reading. And now, does it take time? Does it take discipline? Yes. Well, how come all of those ultra successful people in all kinds of walks of life are all book readers? Okay, we should pay attention to that. I think that's one.
And part of that, Randy, is you have to create time to read for yourself. You have to build that into your schedule. You just can't ignore it or push it away. You've got to make it a priority. And I think a lot of times people don't make it a priority when they should be.
Yeah, I think the people that make the biggest moves in their career or in terms of affecting other people are the people who seek knowledge. Knowledge by itself isn't going to move a boulder. Mm-hmm. Okay. But knowledge, when you add the action with it and the how to, okay, mm-hmm. it means everything. Mm-hmm. And so those that figure out, okay, I got to do this a better way. How can I do it? Well, I heard about this. So I'm going to go learn about that. And then you have to have someone teach you to do it so that you can actually add the action to the knowledge and then make it happen. And there's a million examples of that, but that's so true. I think a lot of people they're going down the road. Okay. They feel good because they got a podcast on, they're listening, they feel like they're helping themselves. But, you know, we forget almost nearly all that we hear.
Yeah.
And so how long does a podcast or how long does an interview on CNN or on YouTube or what, how long does that stuff last? And if we find out there are some really cool things in a podcast, take them, get them written down. I mean, we got voice recorders and phones like it's, you know, nobody's business. I mean, we can do anything these days, and then later carve out some time to dig into it and say, okay, that's cool. How can I do this? Where do I have to go to learn how to do this? Making that extra effort and taking that extra step after learning about something is, I think, what begins to separate the people who are doing the things that everybody wants to do. They just can't all do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's key.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's finish up with this, and this is something that you're very, very passionate about, and kind of the one of your mantras is resilience. Mm-hmm. And resilience in life, resilience in basketball, and how all of it fits together here. You know, where does that kind of mantra come from, and how are you using it to make it part of the stuff that through the IBCA, through your elite coach mentoring, and all of these different programs? What are you doing to bring that attitude of resilience into all of these things that you got going on, all the irons that you have in the fire?
You know, it's really kind of a deep, complicated a topic now that I've really dove into it and began to research it. But I just wrote these things down here. If you talk about if there is ever an example of why we should only concentrate on the things that we can impact and not worry and fester over the things we can't, because that's one of the foundations in resilience. People who react to everything, like maybe a coach on the sidelines who's yeah. really active and reacts to every call, every missed shot, every, oh boy, that'll wear yep. you out.
Yeah.
But those who understand that referees are human, they're going to make mistakes. Okay. Mm-hmm. You can get mad at them all you want, but at the same time, if you go in with a perspective of there's going to be some bad calls,
yep.
I'm going to want to really get mad at this official, but I'm not going to, because I also don't want any of my players to miss their shots.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they all shoot in the 40s, which means they're going to miss 60 out of 100 before they make, you know, before they make their 40.
Yep.
And have that understanding. And I've learned that to be resilient is to have a really healthy perspective of what is reality and what isn't reality. Missed shots, turnovers, referees, a tough loss, how are you going to handle that? A great win, how are you going to handle that? A road game, and what comes with that? Teams that are down 7, have you ever seen a team down 7 get totally out of character and shoot threes because they're trying to get it all back?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is not resilience.
No.
That is that's just being frantic.
Yeah.
Or a team that's up 11 and deciding we're going to win by 18 or we're going to make this an overtime game. and it's all in how we approach things. So the perspective that we have, and the same goes with our life, right? I mean, so many people, I think, in our world get offended when they don't need to get offended. They really don't. People use the word fair and unfair so much, and I don't know what fair is other than that's where they judge pigs. when I entered this life,
I like that one. That's a good one, Randy. That's a good one. I like that one. So
when I entered this life, I didn't get a certificate to say everything is going to run perfect. Nobody's going to bully you. You're going to get A+. You're going to get a hole in one off the tee on every time you play golf. I never got that certificate, and I don't know anybody in this world that has. And so, but we got to live with the idea that bad things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, we have a really serious problem with suicide these days. Okay. And you know, a lot of it was through the pandemic, and there's still research. We'll pull it out at some point. But, you know, we have to decide when things get really difficult, are we going to bail out and say it's too tough and I can't handle this, I'm not made for this? Or are we going to, because of resilience and what resilience can provide for us, if we learn about what it can provide for us, that will allow us to get through, I think, anything. I really do. From a stub toe, when you wake up in the middle of the night, okay? Now, that's a tough one because it's dark. You never know. You're going to run into something else probably. Mm-hmm. You might say a few things that you wish you wouldn't have said. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about those things that happen, like one of your kids gets in a car accident, let's say, like a fender bender. And a parent can go off the handle, or a parent can say, listen, I already knew this was going to happen or something like this. Mm-hmm. I accept it. I'm going to help my child get through it. We're going to learn from it. And then we're going to add, and I talk a lot about when I speak on stage and when I write and I'm in social media, I speak a lot about, I think every time through resilience where we handle something properly, Marty, mm-hmm. we add another layer to the onion.
Yeah.
And it becomes easier the next time we are faced with a really difficult or uncomfortable situation. We learn how to handle those things, and we keep adding layers. Well, the more layers you add, there's not going to be anything that's going to be able to, you know, to really just make you come unglued. Same with a team that doesn't have an identity early in the season. A good coach will get them to believe that they're good enough to win, and he's going to teach them in tough games how to get through and how to win. And you've seen them, right? And you've had yeah. teams that got confidence because they won one. It allowed them to win the next one.
Snowball.
And then the next overtime game, mm-hmm. and then the next overtime game. And conversely, it goes the same for losing.
Yep.
And when you get really close and there's some ingredient that just isn't in place, you know, you lose a layer of the onion, and now you're getting a little exposed, and then you lose another layer and another layer. So it can work both ways. But I think that, and if I've said anything, it's that sports and life are so parallel. And that's a real beauty of being able to be involved in athletics as a coach. And most of us when we were younger as players, because we're just preparing ourselves for when the real tough stuff's going to hit. But we can get through it. Mm-hmm. We can get through anything. And I love this study on resilience, and it's really going to help a lot of people. I'm very hopeful of that.
Well, and I think tying back to networking and genuine relationships, when mm-hmm. you are faced with those resilient situations, as we all know, it's also good to have good people around you to help you through it as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Life's about relationships, and community is important. We need people who put the arm around us and will answer the phone at 3 a.m.
Yep, absolutely. Randy Brown, it has been a privilege and a pleasure to have you on here tonight.
Well, thanks, Marty.
Coach, if folks want to know more about your mentoring program, stuff with the IBCA, they want to get a copy of Rebound Forward, any of your stuff, you know, free and shameless plug on a pen and a napkin here for you, Coach.
Absolutely. I'll add one thing to it. Yep. Resources. I'm one that has saved and created thousands of resources. And I really have nothing to do with them other than send them to people, which I just love doing. If you're listening to this and you've got a desire for some resources and you have something specific or just something that you want me to send you a bunch of stuff, believe me, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. So I'll just wrap up by giving you my email address, which is very easy. It's my initials, RB. For Randy Brown, rb@coachrb.com. And that'll come to my inbox. And anything that you might have a need for at rb@coachrb, I would love to send it out to you and help, and then pass it on. Pass it on. Let's help each other.
Coach, this has been awesome. It's been a terrific conversation. So glad that we were able to hook up here tonight. And, you know, I just hope it's been a good maiden voyage for you here on a pen and a napkin.
Oh, it's been great. It's been great. One of the great names of all time for a program, I'm telling you.
I appreciate it. Well, Coach, if you could hold the line here and just need to wrap up again, Randy Brown, coaching or Rebound Forward, the book, Elite Coaching or Elite Coach Mentoring, just all sorts of great things from Coach. Check his stuff out. Like I said, he's going to get right back to you. So I want to thank Coach for his time today. Want to thank COSAC Chiropractic for, again, being our founding sponsor. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review, give us 5 stars. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me at penandanapkin@gmail.com. Check out a penandanapkin.com. A lot of good stuff here. Great, great discussion here on episode 224 with Randy Brown out of Fort Dodge, the Dodgers.
Yes.
Of the Dodgers, of not quite as original as Sheldon Orabs, but still pretty solid high school nickname that not a lot of people have. So
that's right. That's right.
Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.